"Set it," he said, "but I command you not to touch it, nor to permit any other to lay hand on it. In this elvish sheath dwells the blade that was broken, and has been made again. Tel-Ha first wrought it in the deeps of time. Death shall come to any man that draws Elendil's sword, save Elendil's heir." The guard stepped back and looked with amazement on Aragorn.
"It seems that you have come on the wings of song out of the forgotten days," he said. "It shall be, Lord, as you command." "Well," said Gimli, "if it has Andúril to keep it company, my axe may stay here too, without shame."
And he laid it on the floor.
"Now then, if all is as you wish, let us go and speak with your master."
The guard still hesitated.
"Your staff," he said to Gandalf, "forgive me, but that too must be left at the doors." "Foolishness," said Gandalf. "Prudence is one thing, but discourtesy is another. I am old. If I may not lean on my stick as I go, then I will sit out here until it pleases Théoden to hobble out himself to speak with me."
Aragorn laughed. "Every man has something too dear to trust to another, but would you part an old man from his support? Come, will you not let us enter?"
"The staff in the hand of a wizard may be more than a prop for age," said Harmar.
He looked hard at the ash staff on which Gandalf leaned.
"Yet in doubt a man of worth will trust to his own wisdom. I believe you are friends and folk worthy of honour, who have no evil purpose. You may go in."
The guards now lifted the heavy bars of the doors and swung them slowly inwards, grumbling on their great hinges. The travellers entered. Inside it seemed dark and warm after the clear air upon the hill. The hall was long and wide and filled with shadows and half-lights. Mighty pillars upheld its lofty roof, but here and there bright sunbeams fell in glimmering shafts from the eastern windows high under the deep eaves. Through the louver in the roof, above the thin wisps of issuing smoke, the sky showed pale and blue. As their eyes changed, the travellers perceived that the floor was paved with stones of many hues, branching runes and strange devices intertwined beneath their feet. They saw now that the pillars were richly carved, gleaming dully with gold and half-seen colours. Many woven cloths were hung upon the walls, and over their wide spaces marched figures of ancient legend, some dim with years, some darkling in the shade. But upon one form the sunlight fell, a young man upon a white horse. He was blowing a great horn, and his yellow hair was flying in the wind. The horse's head was lifted, and its nostrils were wide and red as it neighed, smelling battle afar. Foaming water, green and white, rushed and curled about its knees.
"Behold, Eorl the Young," said Aragorn. "Thus he rode out of the north to the battle of the field of Celebrant."
Now the four companions went forward, past the clear wood fire burning upon the long hearth in the midst of the hall. Then they halted. At the far end of the house, beyond the hearth and facing north towards the doors, was a dais with three steps, and in the middle of the dais was a great gilded chair. Upon it sat a man so bent with age that he seemed almost a dwarf. But his white hair was long and thick and fell in great braids from beneath a thin golden circlet set upon his brow. In the centre upon his forehead shone a single white diamond. His beard was laid like snow upon his knees, but his eyes still burned with a bright light, glinting as he gazed at the strangers. Behind his chair stood a woman clad in white. At his feet upon the steps sat a wizened figure of a man with a pale, wise face and heavy-lidded eyes. There was a silence. The old man did not move in his chair. At length Gandalf spoke.
"Hail, Théoden, son of Thengel! I have returned, for behold, the storm comes, and now all friends should gather together, lest each singly be destroyed."
Slowly the old man rose to his feet, leaning heavily upon a short black staff with a handle of white bone. And now the stranger saw that, bent though he was tall and must in youth have been high and proud indeed. "I greet you," he said, "and maybe you look for welcome. But truth to tell, your welcome is doubtful here, Master Gandalf. You've ever been a herald of woe. Troubles follow you like crows, and ever the oftener the worse. I will not deceive you. When I heard that Shadowfax had come back riderless, I rejoiced at the return of the horse, but still more at the lack of the rider. And when Eomer brought the tidings that you had gone at last to your long home, I did not mourn. But news from afar is seldom sooth. Here you come again. And with you come evils worse than before, as might be expected. Why should I welcome you? Gandalf Stormcrow, tell me that." Slowly he sat down again in his chair.
"You speak justly, lord," said the pale man, sitting upon the steps of the dais. "It is not yet 5 days since the bitter tidings came that Theodred, your son, was slain upon the West Marches. Your right hand, second marshal of the Mark. In Eomer there is little trust. Few men would be left to guard your walls, if you had been allowed to rule. And even now we learn from Gondor that the Dark Lord is stirring in the east. Such is the hour in which this wanderer chooses to return. Why, indeed, should we welcome you, Master Stormcrow? Lothspell, I name you. Ill news. And ill news is an ill guest, they say." He laughed grimly, as he lifted his heavy lids for a moment and gazed on the strangers with dark eyes. "You are held wise, my friend Wormtongue, and are doubtless a great support to your master," answered Gandalf in a soft voice. "Yet in 2 ways may a man come with evil tidings. He may be a worker of evil, or he may be such as leaves well alone, and comes only to bring aid in time of need."
"That is so," said Wormtongue. "But there is a third kind. Pickers of bones, meddlers in other men's sorrows, carrion fowl that grow fat on war. What aid have you ever brought, Stormcrow? And what aid do you bring now? It was aid from us that you sought last time that you were here. Then my lord bade you choose any horse that you would and begone, and to the wonder of all you took Shadowfax in your insolence. My lord was sorely grieved. Yet to some it seemed that to speed you from the land the price was not too great. I guess that it is likely to turn out the same once more. You will seek aid rather than render it. Do you bring men? Do you bring horses, swords, spears? That I would call aid. That is our present need. But who are these that follow at your tail? 3 ragged wanderers in grey, and you yourself the most beggar-like of the four.
The courtesy of your hall is somewhat lessened of late, Theoden, son of Thengel," said Gandalf. "Has not the messenger from your gate reported the names of my companions? Seldom has any lord of Rohan received 3 such guests. Weapons they have laid at your doors that are worth many a mortal man, even the mightiest. Grey is their raiment, for the elves clad them, and thus they have passed through the shadows of great perils to your hall."
"Then it is true, as Eomer reported, that you are in league with the sorceress of the Golden Wood," said Wormtongue. "It is not to be wondered at. Webs of deceit were ever woven in Dwemordine."
Gimli strode a pace forward, but felt suddenly the hand of Gandalf clutch him by the shoulder, and he halted, standing stiff as stone.
"In Dwemordine, in Lorien, seldom have walked the feet of men. Few mortal eyes have seen the light that lies there ever long and bright. Galadriel, Galadriel, clear is the water of your well. White is the star in your white hand. Unmarred, unstained, is leaf and land. In Dwemordine, in Lorien, more fair than thoughts of mortal men."
Thus Gandalf softly sang, and then suddenly he changed. Casting his tattered cloak aside, he stood up and leaned no longer on his staff, and he spoke in a clear, cold voice.
"The wise speak only of what they know, Grima, son of Galmord. A witless worm have you become. Therefore be silent, and keep your forked tongue behind your teeth. I have not passed through fire and death to bandy crooked words with a serving man till the lightning falls. He raised his staff. There was a roll of thunder. The sunlight was blotted out from the eastern windows. The whole hall became suddenly dark as night. The fire faded to sullen embers. Only Gandalf could be seen, standing white and tall before the blackened hearth. In the gloom they heard the hiss of Wormtongue's voice.
"Did I not counsel you, Lord, to forbid his staff? That fool Harmer has betrayed us."
There was a flash as if lightning had cloven the roof. Then all was silent. Wormtongue sprawled on his face.
"Now, Théoden, son of Thingol, will you hearken to me?" said Gandalf. "Do you ask for help?"
He lifted his staff and pointed to a high window. There the darkness seemed to clear, and through the opening could be seen, high and far, a patch of shining sky.
"Not all is dark. Take courage, Lord of the Mark, for better help you will not find. No counsel have I to give to those that despair, yet counsel I could give, and words I could speak to you. Will you hear them? They are not for all ears. I bid you come out before your doors and look abroad. Too long have you sat in shadows and trusted to twisted tales and crooked promptings."
Slowly Théoden left his chair. A faint light grew in the hall again. The woman hastened to the king's side, taking his arm, and with faltering steps the old man came down from the dais and paced softly through the hall. Wormtongue remained lying on the floor. They came to the doors, and Gandalf knocked.
"Open," he cried. "The Lord of the Mark comes forth."
The doors rolled back, and a keen air came whistling in. A wind was blowing on the hills.
"Send your guards down to the stairs' foot," said Gandalf, "and you, lady, leave him a while with me. I will care for him."
"Go, Eowyn, sister daughter," said the old king. "The time for fear is past." The woman turned and went slowly into the house. As she passed the doors, she turned and looked back. Grave and thoughtful was her glance, as she looked on the king with cool pity in her eyes. Very fair was her face, and her long hair was like a river of gold. Slender and tall she was in her white robe girt with silver, but strong she seemed and stern as steel, a daughter of kings. Thus Aragorn, for the first time in the full light of day, beheld Eowyn, Lady of Rohan, and thought her fair, fair and cold, like a morning of pale spring that is not yet come to womanhood. And she now was suddenly aware of him, tall heir of kings, wise with many winters, grey-cloaked, hiding a power that yet she felt. For a moment still as stone she stood, then turning swiftly she was gone.
"Now, Lord," said Gandalf, "look out upon your land. Breathe a free air again."
From the porch upon the top of the high terrace they could see beyond the stream the green fields of Rohan fading into distant grey. Curtains of wind-blown rain were slanting down. The sky above and to the west was still dark with thunder, and lightning far away flickered among the tops of hidden hills. But the wind had shifted to the north, and already the storm that had come out of the east was receding, rolling away southward to the sea. Suddenly, through a rent in the clouds behind them, a shaft of sun stabbed down. The falling showers gleamed like silver, and far away the river glittered like a shimmering glass.
"It is not so dark here," said Théoden.
"No," said Gandalf. "Nor does age lie so heavily on your shoulders as some would have you think. Cast aside your prop." From the king's hand the black staff fell clattering on the stones. He drew himself up, slowly, as a man that is stiff from long bending over some dull toil. Now tall and straight he stood, and his eyes were blue as he looked into the opening sky.
"Dark have been my dreams of late," he said, "but I feel as one new awakened.
I would now that you had come before, Gandalf, for I fear that already you have come too late, only to see the last days of my house. Not long now shall stand the high hall which Brego, son of Eol, built. Fire shall devour the high seat. What is to be done?"
"Much," said Gandalf.
But first send for Aylmer. Do I not guess rightly that you hold him prisoner by the counsel of Grima, of him that all save you name the Wormtongue?
It is true, said Theoden. He had rebelled against my commands, and threatened death to Grima in my hall.
A man may love you and yet not love Wormtongue or his counsels, said Gandalf.
That may be. I will do as you ask. Call Harmer to me. Since he proved untrusty as a door-ward, let him become an errand-runner. The guilty shall bring the guilty to judgment, said Theoden, and his voice was grim. Yet he looked at Gandalf and smiled, and as he did, so many lines of care were smoothed away and did not return. When Harmer had been summoned and had gone, Gandalf led Theoden to a stone seat, and then sat himself before the king upon the topmost stair. Aragorn and his companions stood nearby.
"There is no hope to tell all that you should hear," said Gandalf. "Yet if my hope is not cheated, a time will come ere long when I can speak more fully. Behold, you are come into a peril greater even than the wit of Wormtongue could weave into your dreams. But see, you dream no longer. You live. Gondor and Rohan do not stand alone. The enemy is strong beyond our reckoning, yet we have a hope at which he has not guessed." Quickly now Gandalf spoke. His voice was low and secret, and none save the king heard what he said. But ever as he spoke, the light shone brighter in Theoden's eye, and at the last he rose from his seat to his full height, and Gandalf beside him, and together they looked out from the high place toward the east.
"Verily," said Gandalf, now in a loud voice, keen and clear, "that way lies our hope, where sits our greatest fear. Doom hangs still on a thread. Yet hope there is still, if we can but stand unconquered for a little while."
The others too now turned their eyes eastward. Over the sundering leagues of land, far away they gazed to the edge of sight, and hope and fear bore their thoughts still on, beyond dark mountains to the land of shadow. Where now was the ring-bearer? How thin indeed was the thread upon which doom still hung! It seemed to Legolas, as he strained his far-seeing eyes, that he caught a glimpse of white. Far away, perchance, the sun twinkled on a pinnacle of the Tower of God. And further still, endlessly remote and yet a present threat, there was a tiny tongue of flame. Slowly Theoden sat down again, as if weariness still struggled to master him against the will of Gandalf. He turned and looked at his great house.
"Alas," he said, "that these evil days should be mine, and should come in my old age instead of that peace which I have earned. Alas for Boromir the brave! The young perish, and the old linger, withering." He clutched his knees with his wrinkled hands.
"Your fingers would remember their old strength better if they grasped a sword-hilt," said Gandalf.
Theoden rose and put his hand to his side, but no sword hung at his belt.
"Where has Grima stowed it?" he muttered under his breath.
"Take this, dear lord," said a clear voice. "It was ever at your service."
Two men had come swiftly up the stair and stood now a few steps from the top. Aylmer was there. No helm was on his head, no mail was on his breast, but in his hand he held a drawn sword, and as he knelt he offered the hilt to his master.
"How comes this?" said Theoden sternly.
He turned towards Aylmer, and the men looked in wonder at him, standing now proud and erect. Where was the old man whom they had left crouching in his chair or leaning on his stick?
"It is my doing, lord," said Harmer, trembling. "I understood that Aylmer was to be set free. Such joy was in my heart that maybe I have erred. Yet, since he was free again, and he a marshal of the mark, I brought him his sword, as he bade me."
"To lay at your feet, my lord," said Aylmer. For a moment of silence, Theoden stood looking down at Aylmer, as he knelt still before him. Neither moved.
"Will you not take the sword?" said Gandalf.
Slowly Theoden stretched forth his hand. As his fingers took the hilt, it seemed to the watchers that firmness and strength returned to his thin arm. Suddenly he lifted the blade and swung it, shimmering and whistling in the air. Then he gave a great cry. his voice rang clear as he chanted in the tongue of Rohan a call to arms.
"Arise now, arise, riders of Theoden! Dire deeds awake! Dark is it eastward! Let horse be bridled, horn be sounded! Forth, Eorlingus!"
The guards, thinking that they were summoned, sprang up the stair. They looked at their lord in amazement, and then as one man they drew their swords and laid them at his feet.
"Command us," they said. "Westo Theoden Hall," cried Eomer. "It is a joy to us to see you return into your own. Never again shall it be said, Gandalf, that you come only with grief."
"Take back your sword, Eomer, sister son," said the king. "Go, Homer, and seek my own sword. Grima has it in his keeping. Bring him to me also. Now, Gandalf, you said that you had counsel to give, if I would hear it. What is your counsel?"
"You have yourself already taken it," answered Gandalf, "to put your trust in Eomer, rather than in a man of crooked mind, to cast aside regret and fear, to do the deed at hand. Every man that can ride should be sent west at once, as Eomer counselled you. We must first destroy the threat of Saruman, while we have time. If we fail, we fall. If we succeed, then we will face the next task. Meanwhile, your people that are left, the women and the children and the old, should fly to the refuges that you have in the mountains. Were they not prepared against just such an evil day as this? Let them take provision, but delay not, nor burden themselves with treasures, great or small. It is their lives that are at stake."
"This counsel seems good to me now," said Theoden. "Let all my folk get ready. But you, my guests, truly you said, Gandalf, that the courtesy of my hall is lessened. You have ridden through the night, and the morning wears away. You have had neither sleep nor food. A guest house shall be made ready. There you shall sleep when you have eaten."
"Nay, lord," said Aragorn, "there is no rest yet for the weary. The men of Rohan must ride forth to-day, and we will ride with them, axe, sword, and bow. We did not bring them to rest against your wall, Lord of the Mark.
And I promised Eomer that my sword and his should be drawn together."
"Now indeed there is hope of victory," said Eomer.
"Hope, yes," said Gandalf. "But Isengard is strong, and other perils draw ever nearer. Do not delay, Theoden, when we are gone. Lead your people swiftly to the hold of Dunharrow and the hills."
"Nay, Gandalf," said the king, "you do not know your own skill in healing. It shall not be so. I myself will go to war, to fall in the front of the battle, if it must be. Thus shall I sleep better."
"Then even the defeat of Rohan will be glorious in song," said Aragorn. The armed men that stood near clashed their weapons, crying,
"The Lord of the Mark will ride! Forth, Eorlingus!"
"But your people must not be both unarmed and shepherdless," said Gandalf. "Who shall guide them and govern them in your place?"
"I will take thought for that ere I go," answered Theoden. "Here comes my counsellor."
At that moment Harmer came again from the hall. Behind him, cringing between two other men, came Grima the Wormtongue. His face was very white. His eyes blinked in the sunlight. Harmer knelt and presented to Theoden a long sword in a scabbard clasped with gold and set with green gems.
"Here, lord, is Herogrim, your ancient blade," he said. "It was found in his chest. Loath was he to render up the keys. Many other things are there which men have missed."
"You lie," said Wormtongue, "and this sword your master himself gave into my keeping."
"And he now requires it of you again," said Theoden. "Does that displease you?"
"Assuredly not, lord," said Wormtongue. "I care for you and yours as best I may. But do not weary yourself or tax too heavily your strength. Let others deal with these irksome guests. Your meat is about to be set on the board. Will you not go to it?"
"I will," said Theoden, "and let food for my guests be set on the board beside me. The host rides today. Send the heralds forth. Let them summon all who dwell nigh. Every man and strong lad able to bear arms, all who have horses, let them be ready in the saddle at the gate ere the second hour from noon."
"Dear lord," cried Wormtongue, "it is as I feared. This wizard has bewitched you.
"'Are none to be left to defend the golden hall of your fathers and all your treasure? "'None to guard the Lord of the Mark?' "'If this is bewitchment,' said Theoden, "'it seems to me more wholesome than your whisperings. "'Your leechcraft ere long would have had me walking on all fours like a beast. "'No, not one shall be left, not even Grima. "'Grima shall ride too. Go! "'You have yet time to clean the rust from your sword.'
"'Mercy, Lord!'
whined Wormtongue, grovelling on the ground.
"'Have pity on one worn out in your service. "'Send me not from your side. "'I at least will stand by you when all others have gone. "'Don't send your faithful Grima away.'
"'You have my pity,' said Theoden, "'and I don't send you from my side. "'I go myself to war with my men. "'I bid you come with me and prove your faith.'
Wormtongue looked from face to face. In his eyes was the hunted look of a beast seeking some gap in the ring of his enemies. He licked his lips with a long, pale tongue. Such a resolve might be expected from the lord of the House of Eol, old though he be, he said. But those who truly love him would spare his failing years, yet I see that I come too late. Others, whom the death of my lord would perhaps grieve less, have already persuaded him. If I can't undo their work, hear me at least in this, Lord. One who knows your mind and honours your commands should be left in Edoras. Appoint a faithful steward. Let your counsellor Grima keep all things till your return, and I pray that we may see it, though no wise man will deem it hopeful. Eomer laughed. And if that plea doesn't excuse you from war, most noble Wormtongue, he said, what office of less honour would you accept? To carry a sack of meal up into the mountains, if any man could trust you with it.
Nay, Eomer, you don't fully understand the mind of Master Wormtongue, said Gandalf, turning his piercing glance upon him. He's bold and cunning. Even now he plays a game with peril and wins a throw. Hours of my precious time he's wasted already. Down, snake, he said in a sudden, terrible voice. Down on your belly. How long is it since Saruman bought you? What was the promised price? When all the men were dead, you were to pick your share of the treasure and take the woman you desire. Too long have you watched her under your eyelids and haunted her steps.
Eomer grasped his sword. That I knew already, he muttered. For that reason I would have slain him before, forgetting the law of the hall. But there are other reasons. He stepped forward, but Gandalf stayed him with his hand.
"'Eowyn is safe now,' he said. "'But you, Wormtongue, you've done what you could for your true master. "'Some reward you have earned, at least. "'Yet Saruman is apt to overlook his bargains. "'I should advise you to go quickly and remind him, "'lest he forget your faithful service.'
"'You lie,' said Wormtongue.
"'That word comes too often easy from your lips,' said Gandalf. "'I do not lie.' See, Theoden, here is a snake. With safety you can't take it with you, nor can you leave it behind. To slay it would be just. But it wasn't always as it is now. Once it was a man. And did you service in its fashion? Give him a horse and let him go at once, wherever he chooses. By his choice you shall judge him.
Do you hear this, Wormtongue? Said Theoden. This is your choice. To ride with me to war? And let us see in battle whether you are true. Or to go now, whether you will. But then, if ever we meet again, I shall not be merciful. Slowly Wormtongue rose. He looked at them with half-closed eyes. Last of all he scanned Theoden's face and opened his mouth as if to speak. Then suddenly he drew himself up. His hands worked. His eyes glittered. Such malice was in them that men stepped back from him. He bared his teeth, and then with a hissing breath he spat before the king's feet, and darting to one side, he fled down the stair.
"'After him!' said Theoden. "'See that he does no harm to any, but don't hurt him or hinder him. Give him a horse if he wishes it.'
"'And if any will bear him,' said Eomer. One of the guards ran down the stair. Another went to the well at the foot of the terrace, and in his helm drew water. With it he washed clean the stones that Wormtongue had defiled. "'Now, my guests, come,' said Theoden. "'Come and take such refreshment as haste allows.' They passed back into the great house. Already they heard below them in the town the heralds crying and the war-horns blowing. For the king was to ride forth as soon as the men of the town and those dwelling near could be armed and assembled. At the king's board sat Eomer and the four guests, and there also, waiting upon the king, was the lady Eowyn. They ate and drank swiftly. The others were silent while Theoden questioned Gandalf concerning Saruman.
"How far back his treachery goes, who can guess?" said Gandalf. "He wasn't always evil. Once I don't doubt that he was the friend of Rohan, and even when his heart grew colder, he found you useful still. But for long now he's plotted your ruin, wearing the mask of friendship until he was ready. In those years Wormtongue's task was easy, and all that you did was swiftly known in Isengard, for your land was open, and strangers came and went, and ever Wormtongue's whispering was in your ears, poisoning your thought, chilling your heart, weakening your limbs, while others watched and could do nothing, but your will was in his keeping. But when I escaped and warned you, then the mask was torn, for those who would see. After that Wormtongue played dangerously, always seeking to delay you. To prevent your full strength being gathered, he was crafty. Darling men's wariness, or working on their fears, has served the occasion. Do you not remember how eagerly he urged that no man should be spared on a wild goose chase northward, when the immediate peril was westward? He persuaded you to forbid Eomer to pursue the raiding orcs. If Eomer had not defied Wormtongue's voice, speaking with your mouth, those orcs would have reached Isengard by now, bearing a great prize. Not indeed that prize which Saruman desires above all else, but at the least two members of my company, sharers of a secret hope, of which even to you, Lord, I can't yet speak openly. Dare you think of what they might now be suffering, or what Saruman might now have learned, to our destruction? I owe much to Eomer, said Theoden. Faithful heart may have froward tongue. Say also, said Gandalf, that to crooked eyes truth may wear a wry face. Indeed, my eyes were almost blind, said Theoden. Most of all I owe to you, my guest. Once again you've come in time. I would give you a gift, ere we go, at your own choosing. You have only to name aught that is mine. I reserve now only my sword. Whether I came in time or not is yet to be seen, said Gandalf. But as for your gift, Lord, I'll choose one that will fit my need, swift and sure. Give me Shadowfax. He was only let before, if lone we may call it. But now I shall ride him into great hazard, setting silver against black. I wouldn't risk anything that is not my own, and already there is a bond of love between us. You choose well, said Theoden, and I give him now gladly. Yet it's a great gift. There is none like the Shadowfax. In him one of the mighty steeds of old is returned. None shall return again. And to you, my other guests, I will offer such things as may be found in my armoury. Swords you don't need, but there are helms and coats of mail of cunning work, gifts to my fathers out of Gondor. Choose from these ere we go, and may they serve you well. Now men came bearing raiment of war from the king's hoard, and they arrayed Aragorn and Legolas in shining mail. Helms, too, they chose, and round shields. Their bosses were overlaid with gold and set with gems, green and red and white. Gandalf took no armour, and Gimli needed no coat of rings, even if one had been found to match his stature. For there was no habit in the hordes of Edoras of better make than his short corslet forged beneath the mountain in the north. But he chose a cap of iron and leather that fitted well upon his round head, and a small shield he also took. He bore the running horse, white upon green, that was the emblem of the house of Eol. "May it keep you well," said Theoden. "It was made for me in Thingol's day, while still I was a boy." Gimli bowed.
"I am proud, Lord of the Mark, to bear your device," he said. "Indeed, sooner would I bear a horse than be borne by one. I love my feet better. But maybe I shall come yet where I can stand and fight."
"It may well be so," said Theoden. The king now rose, and at once Eowyn came forward, bearing wine. "Ferthul Theoden Hall," she said, "receive now this cup and drink in happy hour. Health be with thee at thy going and coming." Theoden drank from the cup, and she then proffered it to the guests. As she stood before Aragorn, she paused suddenly and looked upon him, and her eyes were shining. And he looked down upon her fair face and smiled, but as he took the cup, his hand met hers, and he knew that she trembled at the touch. "Hail, Aragorn, son of Arathorn," she said.
"Hail, Lady of Rohan," he answered.
But his face now was troubled, and he didn't smile. When they'd all drunk, the king went down the hall to the doors. There the guards awaited him, and heralds stood, and all the lords and chiefs were gathered together that remained in Edoras or dwelt nearby.
"Behold, I go forth, and it seems like to be my last riding," said Theoden. "I have no child. Theodred, my son, is slain. I name Eomer, my sister's son, to be my heir. If neither of us return, then choose a new lord as you will. But to someone I must now entrust my people that I leave behind, to rule them in my place. Which of you will stay?"
No man spoke.
"Is there none whom you would name? In whom do my people trust?"
"In the house of Eol," answered Harmer.
"But Eomer, I can't spare, nor would he stay," said the king, "and he's the last of that house."
"I said not Eomer," answered Harmer, "and he isn't the last. There's Eowyn, daughter of Eomund, his sister. She is fearless and high-hearted. All love her. Let her be as lord to the Eorlingus while we are gone."
"It shall be so," said Theoden.
"Let the heralds announce to the folk that the Lady Eowyn will lead them."
Then the king sat upon a seat before his doors, and Eowyn knelt before him, and received from him a sword and a fair corslet.
"Farewell, sister daughter," he said. "Dark is the hour, yet maybe we shall return to the Golden Hall. But in Dun Haddow the people may long defend themselves, and if the battle go ill, thither will come all who escape."
"Speak not so," she answered. "A year shall I endure for every day that passes until your return." But as she spoke, her eyes went to Aragorn, who stood nearby.
"The king shall come again," he said. "Fear not. Not west, but east, does our doom await us."
The king now went down the stair with Gandalf beside him. The others followed. Aragorn looked back as they passed towards the gate. Alone, Eowyn stood before the doors of the house at the stair's head. The sword was set upright before her, and her hands were laid upon the hilt. She was clad now in mail and shone like silver in the sun. Gimli walked with Legolas, his axe on his shoulder.
"Well, at last we set off," he said. "Men need many words before deeds. My axe is restless in my hands, though I doubt not that these Rohirrim are fell-handed when they come to it. Nonetheless, this isn't the warfare that suits me. How shall I come to the battle? I wish I could walk and not bump like a sack at Gandalf's saddle-bow."
"A safer seat than many, I guess," said Legolas. "Yet doubtless Gandalf will gladly put you down on your feet when blows begin, or Shadowfax himself. An axe is no weapon for a rider."
"And a dwarf is no horseman. It is Orcnecks I would hew, not shave the scalps of men," said Gimli, patting the haft of his axe.
At the gate they found a great host of men, old and young, all ready in the saddle. More than 1,000 were there mustered. Their spears were like a springing wood. Loudly and joyously they shouted as Theoden came forth. Some held in readiness the king's horse, Snowmane, and others held the horses of Aragorn and Legolas. Gimli stood ill at ease, frowning, but Eomer came up to him, leading his horse.
"Hail, Gimli, Glóin's son," he cried. "I haven't had time to learn gentle speech under your rod, as you promised. But shall we not put aside our quarrel? At least I will speak no evil again of the Lady of the Wood."
"I will forget my wrath for a while, Eomer, son of Eomund," said Gimli. "But if ever you chance to see the Lady Galadriel with your eyes, then you shall acknowledge her the fairest of ladies, or our friendship will end.'
"'So be it,' said Aomer. "'But until that time, pardon me, and in token of pardon, ride with me, I beg. Gandalf will be at the head with the Lord of the Mark, but Firefoot, my horse, will bear us both, if you will.'
"'I thank you indeed,' said Gimli, greatly pleased. "'I'll gladly go with you, if Legolas, my comrade, may ride beside us.'
"'It shall be so,' said Aomer. "'Legolas upon my left, and Aragorn upon my right, and none will dare to stand before us.'
"'Where's Shadowfax?' said Gandalf.
"'Running wild over the grass,' they answered. "'He'll let no man handle him. There he goes, away down by the ford, like a shadow among the willows.' Gandalf whistled and called aloud the horse's name, and far away he tossed his head and neighed, and turning sped towards the host like an arrow.
"'Were the breath of the west wind to take a body visible, even so would it appear,' said Aomer, as the great horse ran up until he stood before the wizard.
"'The gift seems all ready to be given,' said Theoden. "'But hearken all. Here now I name my guest, Gandalf Greyhame, wisest of counsellors, most welcome of wanderers, a lord of the mark, a chieftain of the air lingers while our kin shall last, and I give to him Shadowfax, prince of horses.'
"'I thank you, Theoden King,' said Gandalf. Then suddenly he threw back his grey cloak, and cast aside his hat, and leapt to horseback. He wore no helm nor mail. His snowy hair flew free in the wind. His white robe shone dazzling in the sun.
"'Behold the white rider!' said Aragorn, and all took up the words. "'Our king on the white rider!' they shouted. "'Forth, Eorlingers!'
The trumpet sounded. The horses reared and neighed. Spear clashed on shield. Then the king raised his hand, and with a rush like the sudden onset of a great wind, the last host of Rohan rode thundering into the west. Far over the plain Eowyn saw the glitter of their spears as she stood still, alone before the doors of the silent house. Chapter 7 Helm's Deep. The sun was already westering as they rolled from Edoras, and the light of it was in their eyes, turning all the rolling fields of Rohan to a golden haze. There was a beaten way, north-westward along the foothills of the White Mountains, and this they followed, up and down in a green country, crossing small, swift streams by many fords. Far ahead and to their right the misty mountains loomed. Ever darker and taller they grew as the miles went by. The sun went slowly down before them. Evening came behind. The host rode on. Need drove them. Fearing to come too late, they rode with all the speed they could, pausing seldom. Swift and enduring were the steeds of Rohan, but there were many leagues to go. 40 leagues and more it was, as a bird flies, from Edoras to the fords of the Isen, where they hoped to find the king's men that held back the hosts of Saruman. Night closed about them. At last they halted to make their camp. They had ridden for some 5 hours, and were far out upon the western plain, yet more than half their journey lay still before them. In a great circle, under the starry sky and the waxing moon, they now made their bivouac. They lit no fires, for they were uncertain of events. But they set a ring of mounted guards about them, and scouts rode out far ahead, passing like shadows in the folds of the land. The slow night passed without tidings or alarm. At dawn the horn sounded, and within an hour they took the road again. There were no clouds overhead yet, but a heaviness was in the air. It was hot for the season of the year. The rising sun was hazy, and behind it, following it slowly up the sky, there was a growing darkness, as of a great storm moving out of the east. And away in the northwest there seemed to be another darkness brooding about the feet of the misty mountains, a shadow that crept slowly from the wizard's veil. Gandalf dropped back to where Legolas rode beside Aomer.
"You have the keen eyes of your fair kindred, Legolas," he said, "and they can tell a sparrow from a finch a league off. Tell me, can you see anything away yonder toward Isengard?"
"Many miles lie between," said Legolas, gazing thither and shading his eyes with his long hand. "I can see a darkness. There are shapes moving in it, great shapes far away upon the bank of the river, but what they are I can't tell. It's not mist or cloud that defeats my eyes. There is a veiling shadow that some power lays upon the land, and it marches slowly downstream. It's as if the twilight under endless trees were flowing downwards from the hills."
"And behind us comes a very storm of Mordor," said Gandalf. "It will be a black night."
Chapter 8. The Road to Isengard. So it was that in the light of a fair morning King Theoden and Gandalf the White Rider met again upon the grass beside the deeping stream. There was also Aragorn, son of Arathorn, and Legolas the Elf, and Erkenbrand of Westfold, and the lords of the Golden House. About them were gathered the Rohirrim, the riders of the Mark. Wonder overcame their joy in victory, and their eyes were turned towards the wood. Suddenly there was a great shout, and down from the dyke came those who had been driven back into the deep. There came Gamling the Old, and Eomer, son of Eomund, and beside them walked Gimli the Dwarf. He had no helm, and about his head was a linen band stained with blood, but his voice was loud and strong.
42, Master Legolas," he cried. "Alas, my axe is notched. The 42nd had an iron collar on his neck. How is it with you?"
"You've passed my score by one," answered Legolas, "but I don't grudge you the game. So glad am I to see you on your legs." "Welcome, Eomer, sister son," said Theoden. "Now that I see you safe, I'm glad indeed."
"Hail, Lord of the Mark," said Eomer. "The dark night has passed, and day has come again, but the day has brought strange tidings." He turned and gazed in wonder, first at the wood and then at Gandalf. "Once more you come in the hour of need, unlooked for," he said.
"Unlooked for?" said Gandalf. "I said that I'd return and meet you here." "But you didn't name the hour, nor foretell the manner of your coming. Strange help you bring. You are mighty in wizardry, Gandalf the White."
"That may be, but if so, I've not shown it yet. I've but given good counsel in peril, and made use of the speed of Shadowfax. Your own valour has done more, and the stout legs of the Westfold men marching through the night." Then they all gazed at Gandalf with still greater wonder. Some glanced darkly at the wood, and passed their hands over their brows, as if they thought their eyes saw otherwise than his. Gandalf laughed long and merrily.
"The trees," he said. "Nay, I see the wood as plainly as do you. But that's no deed of mine. It's a thing beyond the counsel of the wise, better than my design, and better even than my hope the event has proved."
"Then if not yours, whose is the wizardry?" said Theoden. "Not Saruman's, that's plain. Is there some mightier sage of whom we have yet to learn?"
"It's not wizardry, but a power far older," said Gandalf, "a power that walked the earth ere elf sang or hammer rang, ere iron was found or tree was hewn, when young was mountain under moon, ere ring was made or wrought was woe. It walked the forests long ago."
"And what may be the answer to your riddle?" said Theoden.
"If you would learn that, you should come with me to Isengard," answered Gandalf.
"To Isengard?" they cried.
"Yes," said Gandalf. "I shall return to Isengard, and those who will may come with me. There we may see strange things."
"But there are not men enough in the Mark, not if they were all gathered together and healed of wounds and weariness, to assault the stronghold of Saruman," said Theoden.
"Nevertheless, to Isengard I go," said Gandalf.
"I shan't stay there long. My way lies now eastward. Look for me in Edoras, ere the waning of the moon."
"Nay," said Theoden, "in the dark hour before dawn I doubted, but we won't part now. I'll come with you, if that's your counsel."
"'I wish to speak with Saruman as soon as may be now,' said Gandalf. "'And since he's done you great injury, it would be fitting if you were there. "'But how soon and how swiftly will you ride?'
"'My men are weary with battle,' said the king. "'And I'm weary also, for I've ridden far and slept little.'
"'Alas, my old age is not feigned, nor due only to the whisperings of Wormtongue. "'It's an ill that no leech can wholly cure, not even Gandalf.
"'Then let all who are to ride with me rest now,' said Gandalf. "'We'll journey under the shadow of evening. "'It's as well, for it's my counsel that all our comings and goings "'should be as secret as may be, henceforth. "'But don't command many men to go with you, Theoden. "'We go to a parley, not to a fight.'
The king then chose men that were unhurt and had swift horses, and he sent them forth with tidings of the victory into every vale of the mark, and they bore his summons also, bidding all men, young and old, to come in haste to Edoras. There the lord of the mark would hold an assembly of all that could bear arms on the second day under the full moon. To ride with him to Isengard the king chose Éomer and 20 men of his household. With Gandalf would go Aragorn, and Legolas, and Gimli. In spite of his hurt, the dwarf wouldn't stay behind.
"'It was only a feeble blow, and the cap turned it,' he said. "'It would take more than such an orc scratch to keep me back.'
"'I'll tend it while you rest,' said Aragorn. The king now returned to the Hornburg, and slept, such a sleep of quiet as he had not known for many years, and the remainder of his chosen company rested also. But the others, all that were not hurt or wounded, began a great labour, for many had fallen in the battle and lay dead upon the field or in the deep. No orcs remained alive. Their bodies were uncounted. But a great many of the hillmen had given themselves up, and they were afraid and cried for mercy. The men of the mark took their weapons from them and set them to work.
"'Help now to repair the evil in which you have joined,' said Erkenbrand, "'and afterwards you shall take an oath never again to pass the fords of Isen in arms, "'nor to march with the enemies of men, and then you shall go free back to your land. "'For you have been deluded by Saruman. "'Many of you have got death as the reward of your trust in him, "'but had you conquered, little better would your wages have been.'
The men of Dunland were amazed, for Saruman had told them that the men of Rohan were cruel and burned their captives alive. In the midst of the field before the Hornburg, two mounds were raised, and beneath them were laid all the riders of the mark who fell in the defence, those of the East Dales upon one side, and those of Westfold upon the other. In a grave alone under the shadow of the Hornburg lay Harmer, captain of the King's Guard. He fell before the gate. The orcs were piled in great heaps, away from the mounds of men, not far from the eaves of the forest, and the people were troubled in their minds, for the heaps of carrion were too great for burial or for burning. They had little wood for firing, and none would have dared to take an axe to the strange trees, even if Gandalf had not warned them to hurt neither bark nor bough at their great peril.
"'Let the orcs lie!' said Gandalf. "'The morning may bring new counsel.'
In the afternoon the king's company prepared to depart. The work of burial was then but beginning, and Theoden mourned for the loss of Harmer, his captain, and cast the first earth upon his grave. "'Great injury indeed has Saruman done to me and all this land,' he said, "'and I'll remember it when we meet.' The sun was already drawing near the hills upon the west of the Coombe, when at last Theoden and Gandalf and their companions rode down from the dyke. Behind them were gathered a great host, both of the riders and of the people of Westfold, old and young, women and children, who had come out from the caves. A song of victory they sang with clear voices, and then they fell silent, wondering what would chance, for their eyes were on the trees and they feared them. The riders came to the wood, and they halted. Horse and man, they were unwilling to pass in. The trees were grey and menacing, and a shadow or a mist was about them. The ends of their long, sweeping boughs hung down like searching fingers, Their roots stood up from the ground like the limbs of strange monsters, and dark caverns opened beneath them. But Gandalf went forward, leading the company, and where the road from the Hornburg met the trees, they saw now an opening like an arched gate under mighty boughs, and through it Gandalf passed, and they followed him. Then, to their amazement, they found that the road ran on, and the deeping stream beside it, and the sky was open above and full of golden light. But on either side the great aisles of the wood were already wrapped in dusk, stretching away into impenetrable shadows, and there they heard the creaking and groaning of boughs, and far cries, and a rumour of wordless voices murmuring angrily. No orc or other living creature could be seen. Legolas and Gimli were now riding together upon one horse, and they kept close beside Gandalf, for Gimli was afraid of the wood. "It's hot in here," said Legolas to Gandalf. "I feel a great wrath about me. Do you not feel the air throb in your ears?"
"Yes," said Gandalf.
"What has become of the miserable orcs?" said Legolas.
"That, I think, no one will ever know," said Gandalf.
They rode in silence for a while, but Legolas was ever glancing from side to side, and would often have halted to listen to the sounds of the wood, if Gimli had allowed it. "These are the strangest trees that ever I saw," he said, "and I have seen many an oak grow from acorn to ruinous age. I wish that there were leisure now to walk among them. They have voices, and in time I might come to understand their thought."
"No, no," said Gimli, "let us leave them. I guess their thoughts already. Hatred of all that goes on two legs, and their speeches of crushing and strangling."
"Not of all that go on two legs," said Legolas. "There I think you're wrong. It is orcs that they hate. For they don't belong here, and know little of elves and men. Far away are the valleys where they sprang. From the deep dales of Fangorn, Gimli, that is whence they come, I guess."
"Then that is the most perilous wood in Middle-earth," said Gimli. "I should be grateful for the part that they've played, but I don't love them. You may think them wonderful, but I've seen a greater wonder in this land, more beautiful than any grove or glade that ever grew. My heart is still full of it." "Strange are the ways of men, Legolas. Here they have one of the marvels of the northern world, and what do they say of it? Caves, they say, caves. Holes to fly in time of war, to store fodder in. My good Legolas, do you know that the caverns of Helm's Deep are vast and beautiful? There would be an endless pilgrimage of dwarves, merely to gaze at them, if such a thing were known to be. Aye, indeed, they would pay pure gold for a brief glance."
"And I would give gold to be excused," said Legolas, "and double to be let out if I strayed in."
"You've not seen, so I forgive your jest," said Gimli. "But you speak like a fool. Do you think those hills are fair, where your king dwells under the hill in Mirkwood, and dwarves helped in their making long ago? They're but hovels compared with the caverns I've seen here, immeasurable halls filled with an everlasting music of water that tinkles into pools as fair as Caladzaram in the starlight. And, Legolas, when the torches are kindled and men walk on the sandy floors under the echoing domes, ah, then, Legolas, gems and crystals and veins of precious ore glint in the polished walls, and the light glows through folded marbles, shell-like, translucent as the living hands of Queen Galadriel. There are columns of white and saffron and dawn rose, Legolas, fluted and twisted into dream-like forms. They spring up from many-coloured floors to meet the glistening pendants of the roof. Wings, ropes, curtains fine as frozen clouds, spears, banners, pinnacles of suspended palaces, still lakes mirror them. A glimmering world looks up from dark pools covered with clear glass. Cities, such as the mind of Durin could scarce have imagined in his sleep, stretch on through avenues and pillared courts, on into the dark recesses where no light can come, and plink,
A silver drop falls, and the round wrinkles in the glass make all the towers bend and waver like weeds and corals in a grotto of the sea. Then evening comes. They fade and twinkle out.